The views and opinions of the hosts and guests are their own and do not necessarily reflect the position of the management and staff of Guardian Networks.
Good morning and welcome to Guardian Radio AM. Today is Thursday, November 17th, and it's a little after 11 o'clock in the morning. Once again, this is C.A. Nuri, and I shall be your host for today as we have a discussion about a scourge that is actually hunting and attacking Bahamians because of our diet and our lifestyles. This disease has afflicted many, and however, through education and knowing the signs, I believe that we're able to combat it. So today, actually, I have members of the Bahamas Diabetes Association, because it's Diabetes Awareness Month, who I will be having a discussion with on in order to find out what are the signs of diabetes, what is diabetes, and what can Bahamians do to protect themselves in order to have a long and healthy life. So without further ado, I do have them on Zoom, and I just need everybody to introduce themselves and so we can have our discussion.
Hello, everybody. My name is Nurse Anita Cates. I am a certified diabetes educator, and I represent ACE Diabetes, which stands for Awareness, Compassion, and Education for those who are affected by diabetes.
Okay. Good morning, everyone. I am Dario Charlton. I am a type 1 diabetic, and I've been a type 1 for almost 18 years now. And I represent all of those type wonderfuls out there. I'm happy to be here and happy to share my story about my diabetic journey.
Okay, and I have two guests today. Excellent. So that's Nurse Kate and Dario Charlton, who is going to be
correct. Meeting.
Excellent. That's right. You get two for the price of one today.
And that's always good. And I will start with you, Nurse Cates, right? For my listening audience, I need to understand exactly what is diabetes and what exactly does ACE Diabetes do in terms of educating the public and making them aware of diabetes?
Sure. You're right. Well, let's first talk about what is diabetes. Diabetes is a condition where your body cannot manage its blood sugar correctly. Now, there are many different types of diabetes. I don't know if you knew that.
But, I am now aware, but go ahead. I'm listening.
Right. Okay. So there's probably about 90% of the population of people with diabetes who have type 2 diabetes. Dario is here to represent the other 10%, more or less, that have type 1 diabetes. And even though they have the same outcome as an elevated blood sugar, they're actually two different conditions. So let me just explain to you the difference between the two. So in type 1 diabetes, it tends to affect those who are younger and maybe going into their early adulthood. And what can happen is that their pancreas is being affected by an autoimmune condition, and it actually stops the pancreas from making insulin. So people with type 1 absolutely have to have insulin. And it's not as a result of a poor diet or not exercising, but it's actually a physiological insult on the body, which happened through the autoimmune condition. It can be genetic, so mom or dad might have it, siblings might have it, but there are many reasons why we just don't know why type 1 diabetes comes about. On the other hand, type 2 diabetes, we do know that there are some things we can change and some things we can't change. So type 2 diabetes, things you can't change. You can get diabetes, more likely to get it as we get older. You're more likely to get diabetes if you're from Afro-Caribbean descent, and other certain nationalities and cultures are more likely to get type 2. And you can't help that. So other reasons too include family, you know, if mom, dad, brothers, sisters, and cousins have type 2, you're more likely to get it as well. And then there's something else that we've realized too, is that if a lady during her pregnancy has unmanaged blood sugars, she is more likely to affect the baby to the fact that they might end up with type 2 diabetes growing up in life. So those are things that you can't change. But of course, things that you can change to help prevent type 2 diabetes include being a healthier weight. And you only need to lose about 5% of your weight. It's not a lot. We don't expect anybody to be super skinny. Other things is having a healthier diet, which is low in carbohydrates, higher in healthy vegetables. And also the other thing we can change is moving about more. So getting more exercise and being more active where is possible. So that was pretty comprehensive, wasn't it?
It was. And before I bring in Dario, because Dario will be the first person I've ever spoken to who actually have type 1. So this is like a phenomenon, a rare phenomenon for me. And I would like to know what is the impact on his life on that. But before I go there, Nurse Kate, I want to know numbers in terms of your job. How many Bahamians, is it often? Is it something that you say, okay, it's manageable in the Bahamas. It's not that many people dealing with diabetes. I don't know how prevalent is it in the Bahamas?
So the figures that we have at the moment are only what we can use from the International Diabetes Federation. And they're from 2021. And if we look at the adult population of the Bahamas, that probably takes up about 290,000 people. And out of that 290,000, we believe that about 26,000 people have diabetes. That's not including those people who have pre-diabetes, which is an elevation in their blood glucose levels, but is not at this point diagnosed. So that could actually equate to about 20%. So if we think about those people who have been diagnosed, probably about 9.4%. Those people who have early diabetes, pre-diabetes, about 20%. And then, of course, out of that, there's also a group of people who we just don't know, who are have not been checked by their physicians. So we estimate that maybe about 1 in 4 people have problems with their glucose levels, which, I mean, it's not just common to the Bahamas, right? And I have to be honest about this. This is a worldwide issue that we're faced with.
And you mentioned worldwide issue, and then you mentioned 1 in 4, because 1 in 4 sounds like a lot. One in four sounds like it's a serious issue, a pandemic, a national issue that all agencies, particularly the government and the medical agencies, should be alarmed about, doing ads and promoting, saying, hey, this is something serious. Is diabetes something serious that we should be, not for lack of a better word, in a panic about?
You know, we need to be aware. And you were asking about what does ACE diabetes do? And yes, we bring awareness. So that is the important thing, is that on an individual level, I believe that everybody knows somebody who has diabetes. I'm sure you know maybe one or even two people who have diabetes. So it is exceptionally common. And we do have to be concerned, because living with diabetes is really difficult. But if it's managed well and there's support, then living with diabetes does not have to be a burden. And it does not have to equate to complications. And that's why we're here today. You know, Dario and I are here to bring help and support and encouragement for those people who are at risk of diabetes and who may have the condition.
Okay, I'll go to you, Dario. Dario, there?
I'm here. Good. I'm here.
I'm a type 2 diabetic, right? And I know how my life is in terms of there are certain starchiness, certain sugars like fruits that I tend to cut down in terms of my diet. But that's type 2 oriented diabetes. And you, like I said, you're the first person I've ever met who have type 1. I would like to know, how is this, that your version of this diabetes different from my version of diabetes?
Well, diabetes, what I've learned over the years, while it can be some general definitions, it becomes an individual ailment that people actually walk with on a daily basis. For me, and I'm just like you, until this year or so, I probably only knew one other type 1 or two others, and maybe not as direct. And so I've been on a journey to kind of meet more people that are like me, and we can share our stories, best practices, and see how best we can be of support emotionally and otherwise to one another. But with us type 1 diabetics, like Nurse Kate's advice, you know, we are insulin dependent. So we are left to take sometimes up to seven different injections per day in order to best manage our diabetes. And, you know, the good thing about it is over the many years, technology has advanced to a point where we can learn to live and thrive with diabetes as opposed to suffering from it. And so, you know, we go, an individual like me may be up to 6,000-7,000 shots per year. That's between your insulin shots and testing your blood sugar on a daily basis, sometimes up to 10 times a day if the doctor prescribes it. And that in and of itself can be very scary, but also it does take its toll. And so it becomes very exhausting sometimes. You know, not only that, the social aspects of it, like Nurse Kate said, some people may be in a position where they think you have diabetes so bad that you have to take insulin. It's not that, it's just the type. And so that social aspect of people pointing fingers and asking you these questions like, hey, should you be eating that? And, you know, all this good stuff. It helps when you have someone that's asking it from a good place. But, you know, when it's just someone being malicious and asking you some questions that they have no idea about your type of ailment, at that point, it becomes a bit annoying. So we want to give the education not only to those who have diabetes, but also those who may be family support to a diabetic or be in a position where they have a friend or maybe a coworker that has it, and they can best learn how to communicate and assist that person on a daily, weekly, or how many ever opportunities they may have to help them.
I wanted to further that conversation on, you said you wanted to educate and people who are family and friends of those who suffer or who live, let me use that word because I see you corrected me earlier, suffering and living with diabetes are two different things, especially with the new technology. What would you suggest as who are family of those persons who are living with diabetes? How should they interact with those people?
Yeah, I think it's very important for them to understand the type of diabetes that the person has and the way in which that person is being asked to manage their diabetes. Sometimes people may overreact to a situation where you may be, you know, having a high blood sugar event or a low blood sugar event. And really and truly, the safest thing to do when you are unaware what that number is to provide that person with something sweet, because low blood sugar is far more urgent and detrimental, or at least, you know, you can get to dying quicker from low blood sugar than you would from high blood sugar. But being able to understand what that individual may need, if that individual requires a special shot that may help them to bring their blood sugars up quicker, or if there are particular foods that individual would be able to live a healthier lifestyle enjoying, maybe it'd be a change for the family to make that adjustment, as opposed to, okay, I'm cooking a separate pot for Dario. No, let's all eat, you know, healthier. Let's all, you know, put down all of the heavily starched foods, or, you know, at least bring down the portions so Dario doesn't feel left out. And I think that's some of the things that that support team can always do. Learn about that individual and also engage in some of the lifestyle changes that that person has to go through.
And back to you, Nurse Kate. You mentioned that there seems to be a prevalence amongst Afro men tend not to go and get themselves checked up, even though of late, especially during this diabetes month, there are being pop-ups and free testing all over New Providence and the whole Bahamas now to make sure that people have access to knowing their status regarding diabetes, right? But what, like me, I did not know I was a diabetic until recently, until I had to be rushed and admitted to the hospital. I would like to know, can you inform me, Nurse Kate, about the signs? What should, in particular men, I am a man, what signs should a typical Bahamian man, an Afro-Caribbean man, should be looking for? Or should say, hey, I think I need to get myself checked out. Because I ain't going to the hospital otherwise, but I think I should get myself checked out.
I got you. Yeah, what a great question. So first and foremost, I would say the majority of the time, there are absolutely no symptoms at all. The body is amazing in that you can actually have an exceptionally high blood sugar as somebody who has type 2 diabetes, and you actually not feel anything at all. You may feel a bit tired, but that would be it. So the only time that you would actually find out that information would ideally be to go and get that annual physical done at your physician's office. And I do have to say that, you know, over the many years that I've been here, there has been a significant increase in men taking a responsibility for their health. I would actually say the majority of people who come into my practice now, it's about 50-50. So 50% men, 50% women. So first and foremost, gentlemen, please go and get your annual physical done. And we can tell if you have diabetes through your fasting blood sample and through a test called an HbA1c test. So that is your first port of call. And the great thing about that is if you do get your annual physical taken, your annual bloods taken, we can actually find out if you have pre-diabetes. And I like kind of the word pre-diabetes because if you break that down a bit, it can also stand for prevent diabetes. So if we catch it early enough and your blood sugars are just slightly elevated, you can make those changes. On the other hand, though, as some people get along in their situation, and you might have felt this too, is that some of the symptoms that people can get when the blood sugars are exceptionally high are things like blurry vision, feeling very thirsty, going to the bathroom, weight loss, numbness, tingling in their hands and feet, feeling very, very tired, maybe just not feeling yourself, seem to be some of the more prevalent symptoms of type 2 diabetes and type 1, but type 2 at the moment, then go on to type 1. What tends to happen is that you may have those symptoms, but the majority of time you might not. Now, in a case of somebody who has type 1 diabetes, Dario can kind of lean into this a little bit and explain his story, but often those symptoms are much more severe, they're much more sudden, and are absolutely much more life-threatening in a type 1 than they would be in a type 2.
Yeah, they certainly are. And, you know, my diagnosis came swift. And, you know, noticing the changes was seemingly subtle, and there were a lot of questions. But back then, you know, internet wasn't really as easy to access as it is today. You can just pick up your phone and access it today. Back then, you'd have to go to a library, to school, or pray that your family had sufficient funds to have an actual personal computer in your house. And so it was a different time back then. And so you'd question yourself differently, like, wondering why my thirst's not being quenched. And so you're trying everything. Gatorade, waters, flavored waters. And then to a point where, you know, I wasn't a drinker and I was like, maybe I should try a beer. Maybe that, you know, what my body's telling me. And so as silly as it may sound, a lack of education can really cause people to do some weird things. And so, you know, I dropped like 30 pounds over the course of 2 months and my bathroom use was roof. I couldn't walk 10, 15 feet without having to stop to catch my breath, just tired, just fatigued. And thankfully, I had a family member who was a type 2 and understood some of those symptoms and, you know, woke me up and said, hey, let's go. We're going to go to the doctor. And a simple finger prick identified that my fasting blood sugar that morning was 550, when the average should be between 70 and 100. And that, you know, automatically raises the red flag and sounds the alarm. Straight to the hospital, you have to be admitted and kind of go through this entire regimen. And so, you know, the symptoms, it some of them can be common with other ailments, but that combination of symptoms, it's definitely saying to you, go and get yourself checked out.
And Nurse Kate, I want to know what is the difference between high blood pressure and high blood count, glucose count versus low glucose count? I see that Dario mentioned his sugar numbers were 100. I know my numbers were 1200 plus when I went to doctor's.
I'm impressed.
Yeah, I came out alive. Wow. I came out alive. In fact, I have the record at doctor's hospital, they tell me, at this present time in terms of how high it was. But I want to, for the listening audience, right, who's going to one of the depots to check their glucose numbers, right? I'm sure the nurse will explain to them whether it's high or low. But if they happen to test at home or whatever it is, what is considered normal? What is considered low that you need to panic? And what is considered pre-diabetic? Oh, yes, you need to go to the doctor and get yourself checked out to take medicine.
Really, the only way that a diagnosis can be absolutely made with pre-diabetes or diabetes is through a fasting sample through your physician. So that's really the only way to get an absolute diagnosis. If you have diabetes and you are at home and you're checking your blood sugar, there are certain ranges at certain times of the day, which we choose. So for the majority of people, and I do want to say that blood sugars do land into a normal range, but some people may have tighter control. So for example, what we would normally say for the majority of people is that first thing in the morning, we would want that blood sugar to be it should be between 70 to 130. And those are the guidelines by the American Diabetes Association. 2 hours after eating, we would want that blood sugar to be less than 180. Now, like I said, there may be some other people who have different ranges. But really, anything over 180, we're getting a little concerned about that. Now, for those of you who are going for your blood sugar check, and I would like to say, if you want to come and see me tomorrow, I'm going to be outside Kelly's from about 8:30. I'm more than happy to check your finger stick. Again, that's going to be very dependent upon the situation. But really, we can't tend to give a diagnosis on a finger stick at a fair unless the blood sugar is over 200 and you have those symptoms that we spoke about. But more often than not, when I do check blood sugars and I see that we're cracking over 160, to me, this is a red flag. And it's a prompt to say, listen, you really need to go and get your bloods officially checked by a physician as a fasting sample from your vein and not just a finger stick.
So 160, you're saying, is more likely you can send them to get physical or properly checked by a doctor. And
again, it depends. It depends on the time of day, though. So, say you were to come to me and you hadn't eaten all day, mm-hmm. and I check your finger stick, so and you hadn't eaten. It's first thing in the morning, and you're 160. I'm going to be really concerned about that. Mm-hmm. So, it really depends on the individual, the time of day. There's no absolute one number that I can give. But in your, and you're a young man, right? 40, you're a young guy.
40 plus.
Yeah, you're young. You're young. I would really want to see your blood sugar in the morning less than 110.
Yeah, mine's now average 108 on a typical day, 106.
Wonderful. So your blood sugar isn't running like at 96.9 then?
No.
Okay, cool. Just checking in on that. So your blood sugar should be less than at that time. And for you, I'd want your blood sugars to be a bit tighter, if possible. So 2 hours after eating, I'd like to see your blood sugar less than 140.
I'll be like 120, 125 after eating someplace there.
Look at you. You're just killing it. Yeah, that's great.
I'm good at numbers. But I find there are times when, especially when you take your insulin, it drops low to the point I say, oh, Lord, something wrong, when it drops to 70. But then again, that's just me. But I want to talk about food.
Well, hold up a minute. No, you hang on. Now, what you've mentioned here, and Dario can kind of talk about this too, that yes, if you've taken insulin or if you're on medication which increases the production of insulin by the pancreas, such as diamicron or Amaryl, a blood sugar of 70 or less is classed as hypoglycemia, a low blood sugar level. Now, for most people who don't have diabetes, a blood sugar of 70 is kind of normal. But if you are on insulin or on diamicron or the Amaryl that we spoke about, that is hypoglycemia, and it should be treated with sugar. It should actually be treated with sugar to elevate it to at least above 100.
Yes. And that's a trick also I want to ask about, but I'll ask about next. That'll be my next. No, let me ask that now. Let me ask that sure. now, and then my next question will be that. For a person, a patient, who is aware that they have diabetes, right? And they know the numbers, they study the numbers, they know that if it drops below 70, that you should panic and you need something to boost your sugar level up. And if it goes to 170, 180, you know you may have to bring it, your sugar back down. Just as a layman's term, of course you're a nurse, professional nurse, for a person who's diabetic, if it drops to 55, 60, what do you recommend that they should do? Besides rush it to the hospital, but go ahead.
No, first off, no rushing to the hospital at that point. You need to get sugar. Mm-hmm. There's no two ways about it. Dario mentioned earlier, better to treat and to make sure to get that blood sugar up. And it's fast acting sugar. Now, that means that we're looking at sugar absolutely in its raw form. You can use jams, jellies, or this is your opportunity to have half a can of soda or even a can of regular soda, some orange juice to bring that up, something that's quick. What we do not recommend is things like chocolate, biscuits to bring it up. Okay. Yes. And hold that right there because it contains fat. And fat actually slows the increase of the glucose levels. So you are not going to get a quick rise. So ideally, when you're having a low blood sugar, you need to go for sugar to bring it up. Sugar on its own.
And what if your sugar is high? 180, 190? Plus, what do you recommend that they do? A person who is aware that they're diabetic and they need to do something.
Well, first off, these things happen. So the first thing is do not panic. And then the next thing is to think about what have you just done? You know, have you gone and drank a soda?
Eat
have
cake
you,
at a party.
Are you sick? You know, yeah, and there you go. So what is the cause of that? Sometimes it's just a one-off. right? So maybe you want to drink some water. If you're overly concerned, maybe go in for a little walk, something like that, to bring the blood sugars down. But really, we start to get very concerned if we're seeing those blood sugars high on a regular basis. So we really want to make sure that it's not too high at all. And if you are seeing consistent with those blood sugars being elevated over a period of days, then this is the time to really go and see your physician. Mm-hmm. There are cases when the blood sugars can be exceptionally high, which is out of the norm for you. So, for example, you woke up one morning and your blood sugar is 250.
My Lord.
That's completely out of the norm for you. Mm-hmm. And I would be tempted, I would recommend that you check that blood sugar again and then get yourself off to the doctors, because something is going on. And most likely in somebody whose blood sugar has immediately gone high without any warning or without any particular reason, it's often a sign of illness or infection that's caused a rise in the glucose levels.
And Nurse Kate, I have a caller here who wants to ask a question. So I'll patch that caller through now to see.
Sure.
And then Dario, I come back to you because I want to know, what do you do in terms of your lifestyle, in terms of managing your sugar numbers? But let me let this caller come through. Go ahead, caller.
Sure. Good day. How are you doing?
Good day. It's lovely to hear from you. I'd love to hear your question.
Wendy, I'm going to give you, well, it's not really a question. I'm going to give you a cure situation for diabetes too.
Because I am a victim.
Cure person. And I want to share that with the nation for diabetes too. However, with the diabetes one, I guess we'll have to explain that a bit, because it is, like the host says, a little more complicated. I was diabetes 2 all of my life, from about early 20s or 18 to early 20s. And I was diabetic for 30-something years. I went from pills to shots, to Lance shots and stuff like that, 3 times a day. And during, unless I was hospitalized for burning the bottom of my feet, and the skin had to be removed, right?
Wow.
And the doctor said to me, boy, you're going to be in hospital for a very long time being a diabetic. However, there was an elderly lady that came around to visit the patients to pray. And she prayed with me, and she asked me what was my problem. And I told her what had happened and my condition. And she said to me, okay, I'm going to bring you something tomorrow. And when you get out of the hospital, I would like for you to do this twice a week. And in 3-4 months' time, they will can't find your sugar. And what she did, she took the flesh of the aloe leaf. She said, we have it in our yard and we don't use it.
Can I just ask you, I'm just curious, what was your last A1C test? And
my last A1C about 3 weeks ago to Dr. Downtown Medical was a 6.
The 6. Okay. That's amazing. Now, I would love to say that the aloe plan was the cure for your diabetes. No, that you had done other things as well. Changing diet, exercising, and those types of things.
Yes, of course. But let me finish my trend. She took the flesh out of a nice leaf of aloe plant, and she told me to get the bluebird orange juice out of the food store, the big can, the old-fashioned one. Blend those two together, because when you blend them, the orange juice takes away the bitter and it makes it taste more or less like a grapefruit, almost a sweetened grapefruit juice. Mm-hmm. And she said to drink that twice a week. And she said,
appreciate you mentioning this, but I will be honest, this is something I would not recommend. And with some people, mixing the juice like that could actually be very dangerous. So
yes,
I appreciate you sharing that. That worked for you, but I am a bit concerned about that. But I'm very glad you've been able to make those changes with your health, and you've been able to eat better and exercise, and that your A1C is less, which is just absolutely phenomenal. So thank you
so much.
Well,
I'm not trying to
take
business from you, but
thank you so much.
I have several persons on it now, and they're thanking me every day.
Thank you so much for your call. But often orange juice is not part of the actual cure for diabetes. Thank you.
No, I understand, because, normally nurses and doctors are not a part of actual nutrition. Thanks for taking.
Oh, I'm so sorry, but I'm I thank you so much for the call. I appreciate what you're saying, but if I'd rather not continue with this conversation because the information that you're giving, I don't think is helpful for the majority of people. So it would be wonderful. You know, like I said, I admire you for coming on the call. I'm so thankful that you were able to bring your blood sugar down and getting it to 6. I think that's amazing.
And Nurse Kate and Dario, we're going to take a short commercial break. And when we come back, I'm going to speak to Dario and also Nurse Kate. I worry about people who take these home remedies and destroy their liver and stuff like that. So I want you to do some commentary on that when we come back on the other side. This is being Guardian Radio at AM with C.A. Nuri, and I'm talking to Dario, who's a type 1 diabetes, a diabetic, and also Nurse Kate, who is a specialist at ACE Diabetics. We'll be right back.
Was just a sound effect? When your living room wasn't your gym? When a cough didn't scare people away? That was the good old days. And thankfully, they are coming back. As things return to normal, remember it is essential to be fully immunized against all vaccine-preventable diseases like COVID-19, diphtheria, tetanus, measles, and influenza. This message is brought to you by PAHO WHO, the Ministry of Health and Wellness, the Caribbean Development Bank, the Government of Canada, and the United States of America.
Here we go.
J.S. Johnson Insurance Agents are the best. Criminal service, we've been on the scene, protecting since 1919. J.S. Johnson Insurance has the best.
Love the show? Want to give your support? Become a sponsor today. Call 302-2300 for our rates and packages. That's 302-2300. Become a sponsor on Guardian Radio 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
This is Guardian Radio, 96.9 FM. Fresh news, smart talk, all day.
And welcome back to Guardian Radio in the AM with C.A. Nuri, and I'm talking to Dario. And is Dario or Darius? Dario, correct?
Yes.
Okay, Dario. And I'm talking to Nurse Kate. And I wanted to hear exactly what Dario is doing to keep his sugar level at a particular post, especially for a type 1 diabetic in general. I just want to know, what are you doing? What is your regimen?
So I can tell you diabetes can be very individual. All depends on your lifestyle, your needs, and then, you know, what your body requires. I am... just 37 years old. And so, you know, I should be active. I still have young children. And so what I've done, especially in the last few years, in trying to access the better technologies that are out there that can help you to, you know, kind of relieve the burden and relieve that exhaustion, is I've found ways to get connected to a continuous glucose monitor. That replaces the normal glucose test that you have to prick your finger and put in and get a particular reading. My continuous glucose monitor goes on once every 14 days, and then it returns to me a blood sugar reading every minute. So I end up with 720 different values throughout the course of a day.
One on the phone that's attached to your arm?
Correct. So you insert it in your upper arm. You open the app on your telephone, and once that is warmed up, it starts to give you your blood sugar readings every 60 seconds. And what that helps with is it identifies for you the direction in which your blood sugars are headed in, and it gives you a good understanding on how your daily activity is, the different meals that you may eat, a snack here or there, if you may have a meeting and the stress that comes with that, or if you may be sick, it gives you a good understanding of how those different things impact your blood sugars. For me, I try to keep a very tight range. I love to stay between 70 and 100 where possible. I keep a tight range of 70 to 180. And most of the time, when I say most of the time, I probably have a timing range of about 96% where I can stay within that range. How I keep that up is a mixture of exercise and diet. Of course, I have my cheat days, and so I ensure that my insulin is taken to help manage those days when I want to eat some butter pecan ice cream on a waffle cone, or if I want to have some rum cake or a slice of guava duff or something along those lines. But that's something that I try not to do as often. I build up and kind of really, you know, prepare myself for that so I don't take such a big shot to my sugars. But it's really about learning your body, learning what foods work for you, learning what you need to do with certain foods, because there are certain foods that would take my blood sugar up quicker than it may take yours up on CA. And likewise, there may be certain foods that wouldn't impact my blood sugar, but would impact yours. Mm-hmm. And so it's about learning your body, learning what works for you, and then working along with your endocrinologist, with your diabetes management team to really make the best decisions as it relates to your medication and your regimens in that field.
Okay, thanks. And Nurse Kate, to you, diabetic diabetes support. Your organization is a support group. It gives you information. It's available online. I see it all over Facebook. But I want to understand, what support is there for persons living with diabetes?
Oh, that's a wonderful question. We are so fortunate here that we do have a group of healthcare professionals who are certified in diabetes care and diabetes education. So myself, along with other healthcare professionals who are a part of the Bahamas Association of Diabetes Educators, have been back to school to educate themselves on the management and prevention of diabetes and how to teach this to people. So diabetes educators are available in the country, which is just wonderful. And you can Google the Bahamas Diabetes Association. They had a wonderful symposium on Monday. ACE Diabetes, we've been around for like 10 years now, and we provide support through our Zoom in on diabetes, which we have every month. We've actually got one coming up at the end of this month with Dr. Pinto. And we're talking about, as you mentioned about men earlier, we're talking about erectile dysfunction and diabetes and erectile dysfunction in general. So that'll be a great topic to discuss just before Christmas. So we do education, but of course, education does not mean behavioral change, right? Because you can have the knowledge but not take action, condition. In order for us to make those changes, we really need to walk hand in hand with somebody who can support us. And like Dario was saying, you know, it is the family support. It is the support of friends. And it is the support of other people who are in a position like yourself. So at ACE Diabetes, we have a little WhatsApp group that came out of a course which I run called 5 to Thrive, which is 5 weeks of education. And then behind the scenes, we do have these opportunities for connection and support. Of course, you've got myself as well, and Dr. Cates, and other healthcare professionals too, that's going to be able to support you on your journey, especially when it gets tough. Right. And especially when you have questions, and we mentioned earlier about alternative therapies, you know, what is going to be best for me to come up with some very sensible options for alternative things to be able to help you with your diabetes.
And two rapid questions, Nurse Kate. Are you familiar with Actos as a medication for diabetes?
I am, yes.
And what do you think about that? It's a text question.
I think, does it work?
Yeah, does it work?
Is it working for you?
No, that's not me. That's a texter want to know about Actos.
Actos can absolutely be a part of your diabetes regime. I mean, admittedly, and it is a long answer, and I apologize for this, there's something called the diabetes octet, meaning eight. And there are eight foundational things that occur within the body that causes high blood sugar in people with type 2 diabetes. And the Actos actually works on one part of the diabetes octet. So when a physician is making a decision on medication, looking at the whole person to find out what could be possibly wrong that's having an impact on the blood sugar. And it's not always that lack of diet and lack of exercise. There's lots of other things that go into diabetes. So yes, Actos may be used. It's not often, I'll be honest with you. It's rarely used these days, but it may be used.
And the next question is stem cell therapy for diabetes.
Interesting.
Ooh. Now, yes, stem cell doesn't often work, doesn't work in type 2 diabetes. In type 1 diabetes, there has been a lot of work that's happened. Just giving somebody stem cells in type 1 diabetes to regenerate the pancreas is not always going to work, if actually work at all. And the reason behind this is because the foundation of type 1 diabetes is an autoimmune condition which destroys the cells of the pancreas. So often if somebody is given stem cell research is still out there, we're really having to think about anti-rejection therapy, which has its own complications. So stem cells is still in the very, very, very early stages. It's super expensive. And at this point in time in type 2, we've not seen much progress. In type 1, there's some, but there's still a lot of research happening.
Okay, Nurse Kate, this has been CA Nuri on Guardian Radio AM. We are interviewing Nurse Kate and also Dario about his type 1 diabetes. And we will be back tomorrow. Have a wonderful day.